Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 274, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. As always, I am Chris Featherstone, follow us at Crave Wrestling on Facebook, and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. Tonight, I'm really, really excited to have this guest on the show. I always count my female guests, because there's something about the female guests that makes it the show that much more important for some reason, because I rarely have female guests. I think this is the fourth or fifth female guest that I've had in 5 years, nearly 100 guests. So it's unique, it's special, and I'm really excited to bring on former WWE star Ariane Andrew, formerly known as Cameron. How are you tonight? Listen, ladies and gentlemen, it's Ariane. Yes. Okay, that's a good way. That's a good way to memorize it. Ariane, yes, Ariane Andrew. Formerly known as Cameron. Did you ever like that name, Cameron?
Boy's name for a girl.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, I
would sort
of choose like a cooler name, but that's, you know, one of the ones that was on my list at the time, and that's the one they went with.
Yeah, because you're originally Cameron Lynn, right?
Because
bring that femininity in it.
Yeah, it was originally Cameron Lynn, and they dropped the Lynn when they put me for credit talk, so.
Yeah, I agree. I like the Cameron thing, too. A friend of mine, her daughter's name is Cameron. My brother's name is Cameron. It just that unisex, kind of unisex type of name, like Ryan, you know, Ryan Shamrock back in the day in WWE. So that's very interesting. So you are tough enough. What made you want to come to the WWE in the first place? You have that really monumental moment that you had with Stone Cold Steve Austin about your favorite match that, you know, has been talked about a bunch of times. It's not too much need to beat on that dead horse. But it's interesting that someone who has been known to not be necessarily a wrestling enthusiast decided to pursue the career of wrestling? What made you want to do that?
I didn't grow up, you know, watching wrestling. I know a lot from the WWE, you know, WWE Universe and the IWC. That's like, oh my gosh, it's a crazy thing. And what's crazy about it, though, is that there's a lot of girls, you know, who have been in WWE that are there now that wasn't their lifelong dream, and they don't get screwed for it. I think it's more so because of the match that I said, and at that time, that's just what I felt. I own it. I don't take it back. But it did teach me a valuable lesson, which was to really understand why it made so many people mad and to really go dig deep and learn the history behind wrestling. And, you know, it's something that I don't regret, because if it wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't have learned. It wouldn't have pushed me to really, 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 you know, fall my way up and show, like, okay, just because I didn't grow up watching wrestling doesn't mean that if there's no place for me, I'm gonna bust my butt to get there. And, you know, it's just to prove to you guys that, you know, this is something that I do want to do. So sorry, I got a little off track of that, but, you know, when I initially found out about WWE, I've always loved sports. I ran track in high school. I've always loved getting back to the community. And, you know, WWE is really big with Special Olympics, Steve Coleman. And I worked with autistic children before WWE as a behavior therapist. And I've always loved entertaining. So when I found out, you know, that I could have that opportunity to find all those things together, and I was like, this is the dream.
Wow, yeah, that's awesome. Well, I mean, despite that moment on Tough Enough, the WWE still saw something in you that they were willing to cultivate. Who recruited you? Who gave you the call, and as far as just bring you to the WWE to give you an opportunity?
offer you a contract. And of course, like, I mean, if you think about it, if someone were to come up to you and say you could be a part of this amazing company, who would say no? You know, no matter what your background is.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I know that there's a lot of people in the indies that, you know, dig their way to, you know, be a part of the WWE, but everybody's journey is different. I think that's something that people forget.
We're
all handed opportunities different ways. Sometimes it's about timing, and I feel like at the end of the day, I feel like it's what you do that wants giving you an opportunity, no matter what your background is, because that's life. And sometimes life is unfair, but we also know people's backstories and what they went through to even get there.
That's right.
It's not been breaking, you know, for the inches and, you know, going through all that. And I know how many people are being in difficulties. They go through a lot, don't make much money, but they're doing something because they're passionate about it.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, it's just one of those things that, like, I'm happy I'm going to have the opportunity to discuss it, because, yes, my journey was different. People can call it unfair, but no one knows what I went through to get to where I was at. All the blood, sweat, and tears, and, you know, the little things of going back down, and it seemed like I really wanted it. So it's like, again, everyone's journey is different.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that an example of that is, you know, Bill Goldberg. You know, he was more known as a football player, but there was something about Bill Goldberg that they saw. He came, he didn't have to claw and scratch and be in the business for, you know, 10, 15 years, and became one of the biggest superstars in pro wrestling history. So, like you said, you know, journeys are different, but it just matters what you do with what you're given and the path that you take that people are really going to remember. So, yeah, I agree with you there. As far as the IWC is concerned, which is a very brutal, you know, community, yeah, and what type of feedback throughout your pro wrestling career, I'm sure, unfortunately, it was probably not becoming or probably not encouraging or endearing. What type of feedback or what are some of the negative stuff that you've heard throughout your career as a wrestler from the dreaded IWC, the heartless IWC community? What are some of the stuff that you've heard from them?
Oh, something that's too vulgar. We're going to keep it PG for the kiddies.
Indeed.
let's put it this way. If I could be in the spotlight, everyone's going to have an opinion.
Yeah.
And because mainly everyone's just like mommy, always a Cameron character, they never really got to carry on. And I didn't have the machine behind me, so of course, that's such a boisterous character, and then, not having the machine to back me up and beating every match.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, sometimes people forget that this is sports entertainment. We're there to entertain. And so everyone knows, when it comes to the finish, it's predetermined. That's not a secret anymore.
Mm-hmm.
After watching Divas, it's like that's what the truth is, and that's just kind of, how things have evolved. But, at the end of the day, I take the positive and the negative. Sometimes I listen. It's like, okay, maybe I could change these things. It's made me who I am today, and
mm-hmm.
I don't expect everyone to love me. And that's fine. Everyone's not going to love you no matter what you do. It's just that's the kind of the price you pay when you try to step into the limelight.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like as long as I know what I'm doing on my end, using my platform. For the youth and to encourage them no matter what, that stay resilient, that the sky has no limit.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not a fairy tale ending, you pray things, you're focused and you're resilient. Things do come to light, so.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that.
I don't
take it personal. Initially, it was a hard pill to swallow. There's moments where I'm just like, oh my gosh, I'm like, I'm human. We're all human. I'm pretty sure there's been quite a few people who have looked at comments before and thought like, oh my God, do I want to do this anymore? Or I don't know if I can do this. I would be lying to you. I'm
mm-hmm.
very honest. I just learned to say that didn't bother me. But then you learn to grow this thick skin. And if you can't, then no. I don't think being a trainer or being a wrestler is the right, job for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. So your time with Naomi, with Brodus Clay, it's really interesting how that formulated. So many people thought that Brodus was coming as some monstrous heel, and all of a sudden the Funkasaurus debuts. Now, how? Because he was having all these vignettes, and then Laurinaitis was, kind of on the phone, passing the weeks by, saying he's going to debut this week and this week. When did you come along in the whole mix of reforming Brodus's character?
Naomi and I were doing gimmicks down at FCW, which is now NXT.
Mm-hmm.
I just say that so whoever decides to look better doesn't follow wrestling. And we were having so much fun and through this chemistry. And to this day, I still don't know if she'd ask. I personally would have so much fun doing this, with me. But I remember when NXT was, in its starting phase and it's on our campaign, and he was like, "Do you have, any dance experience?" And I was like, "No, not really." At that time, when I, it's my last question, should have been like, yes, I'm the best dancer there is. by saying that, maybe they're like, oh, maybe we should go with someone else who does have that, a dance experience. So I remember getting a phone call, and I thought it was, a mistake or something. They were like, you're going to be called alone. I was so confused. I was like, for what? I'm just going to have to wrestle. Jesus Christ, I've only been down here for 6 months, so I am not prepared for that. And at the time, Brandy was leaving, And they were like, oh, you're going to be announcing. And then I heard, oh, you're going to be doing this dance gimmick with Curtis Naomi. I was so scared. So there were so many things that were going on. I was just like, okay. They were like, okay, we're going to have you start announcing. So that's what I thought of doing, which I hadn't done. So I was like, either way, this is sink or swim.
Yeah.
You know, in entertainment and in the WWE, it's like sometimes you got to fake it till you make it, and it's, if you're put on the spot, it's, that shows, like, sometimes you don't have time to process or think about it. Just go out there and do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did. Never had danced in heels for energy before. It was one of those moments. It's like, sink or swim.
Yeah. And then, personally, I thought that I didn't really want to see Brodus come back as a monster heel, because WWE didn't really do a really good job pushing monster heels at that time. They're doing pretty good with Brodus, Braun Strowman. But back then, it wasn't too, I mean, we saw a few people coming in and out, including his future partner, Sweet Tea, who was once, you know, Lord Tenzai. Did Matt Bloom give you guys any good pointers? Because now he's one of the, you know, head trainers down in the Performance Center.
Done. But for the most part, you know, we all try to, you know, listen to each other and kind of take advice. I mean, for me, there's not much I can really say, because I'm just like, I'm this is so new for me. It's like, I'm just going to kind of, you know,
soak it all in. Yeah.
And just soak it all in and then, you know, find my place and find my voice.
Yeah.
Once I kind of started getting used to, you know, because at that time, it was just Naomi and Brodus and I had got, you know, a little bit more comfortable. So then it's like I was able to tell Brodus, like, okay, let us do it this way, and able to chime in once I kind of got a feel for things. It was a pleasure working with Matt actually down in NXT. It's like I got to see a different side to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was actually very helpful when I had went back down there.
Yeah, that's really good.
Really helped me,
yeah.
He's a great person.
That's awesome. Yeah, and he has tons of experience. And just speaking about your NXT days, I mean, we kind of saw a little bit, some shades of it on the Total Divas. Just your desire to really continue to grow and mature in the business, you made the decision, if I'm not mistaken, you made the decision to want to go back to NXT and just really kind of hone in your craft. Am I correct on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what my, you know, pros, cons, I knew I was the best in-ring performer. That was a given. I didn't have the time to perfect my craft. And she was trying to train up. I was in, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to cut it. And I knew that I had charisma, which that's something I feel like you can't teach. But, you know, with the right person, I feel like you can teach someone to be a wrestler if they're dedicated and they do, you know, get focused and learn. And so for me, I just was so tired of just being on the road, and I'm like, don't get an off season. It's 2 days off the year. I don't want to just sit here and collect a paycheck. That's not why I came here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to just sit here and just collect points. That's not, I mean, for some people that works for them. For me, it's like, I want to work hard for my money.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know that, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, it feels good when you busted your butt and you're like, wow, this paycheck means something. It didn't mean anything to me because I was just sitting there.
Because you were an athlete, and so you grew up competitive. So you had that competitive spirit in you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know what? I pitched so many ideas, and I was like, okay, what if even if it's not in ring? I don't. So many things that I pitched, you wouldn't even believe. It's from, you know, being a manager to a talk show to God, I can't even remember now. But there was so many things. Nothing was coming to life. And I was like, you know what? This is a hard call. I walked into Mark Donato's office, and I was just like, I don't want to come back to TV. Like, you know, I don't want to come back until the storyline. And I want to go back down to NXT and work hard and,
yeah,
and find a place. And ultimately, it wasn't a fairy tale ending. But I can personally walk away knowing that I did everything that I possibly can, and I have zero regrets.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because I think your character really started to shine in NXT. I think they cut you prematurely, because I really think that your character was starting to shine in NXT. And NXT was really a breeding ground to really revive some characters. They did it with Tyson Kidd, they did it with Zack Ryder, and we were looking forward. I was personally looking forward to you, kind of really honing your craft and coming back on the main roster with more of a character, with more of an angle, with more of a direction as a solo competitor. So, I think they cut you short, but, it happens, and you learn from it, like you said. So you mentioned that you were supposed to be a manager. Did you want to, divulge the name, who you were supposed to, who you wanted to manage, or you pitched to manage? Oh, okay.
It's like, okay, I know I have a place here. I'm like, okay, fine. Maybe Ray is still seeing me as a performer, and maybe that just won't come to life.
Mm-hmm.
I can, as hard as it, that was, I'm like, I can take that. Okay, but then let's choose what I'm very talented at, and I know that's talking on the mic. So let's do that. Look at Vicky Guerrero. How big a team step in the ring, and, granted, from where she came from, she had such a high respect level, but she's phenomenal on the mic. I mean, look at Marie, she just came back, She's doing, what she's doing with the Miz. It doesn't even require, her to even be in the ring. I'm not sure she doesn't want to be or not, but it's like, there's room,
Yeah.
Do so many things, and that even if it wasn't just an in-ring competitor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted. That's what I signed up for. I didn't sign up to be a dancer, so that was very blessed and very fortunate to have that opportunity. Very, very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I just wanted to see myself into, and it was what I wanted to do. I won't, be a broken record, but, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Like, the perfect timing. Is sometimes everything, and that's just kind of how the puzzle, the pieces of the puzzle landed, and,
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that I did everything I could.
Yeah, I've talked to many people in the pro wrestling industry, friends with a bunch of professional wrestlers who've spend some time in the WWE, and I think that it seems like the common thread that I've received from just about every one of them is that it's so easy to do just about anything else, with anything. I was just transcribing an interview with Alex Riley, formerly Alex Riley, and he's pursuing acting now as well, and he was just talking about how if you can go out in underwear in front of, 13, 15, 20,000 people, you really don't have the jitters anymore to do anything else. And I think even from the female standpoint, there's so many people, especially for you, there's so many people, just because you don't have that pedigree, or you don't have that enthusiast, or you didn't have it, but now, like you said, you've grown to really appreciate the art of wrestling. But you have so many people because you didn't have those elements to just throw darts at you and just, give you the whole kitchen sink through Twitter and Facebook. You've learned to accept no when it comes to, acting, or it comes to different roles, or if you get declined. Those things, you really get an opportunity to appreciate what you came from and handle the no's more. Is that sound about right?
I don't know if that's what that scares me. I'm like, I literally had a 5 minutes. Then, I literally was in a going back and forth a contract for an opportunity I just had, and things didn't end up coming full circle. Just didn't come to an agreement with how we felt. And I remember leaving, and I was just like, woo, like, after all that, and with the attorneys, and we got that attorney and all this stuff, I was just like, I had a moment in the car, 5 minutes, and then literally I had a snap out of it, and I'll speak about it, and I was saying I was too quiet, but I recently just got a podcast on CBS Radio, and I literally had to just turn it, like, go from that, get dressed, go, you know, come home, get dressed, and go straight to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
You know?
That's awesome. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. So best wishes to you. I mean, you're still young. You haven't reached 30 yet, right? You reached 30 this year, right?
This year. I'm 29 years young.
Wow. Yeah, so you got so much ahead of you career-wise. Let the listeners know. I know we've talked off air about some things that you can't unveil, you know, live yet. Yeah.
But it's all good.
Well, it's good. Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome. It's good. It's great that you have opportunities. And the WWE has really allowed you to build such a strong resume for many opportunities. So just let the listeners know where to find you and, you know, where to find your portfolio. I'm sure there's going to be some people listening who's looking forward for, you know, some acting gigs or whatever you're doing nowadays. Fantastic. Appreciate your time, and I would love to be a guest to talk wrestling with you on the CBS podcast. Just let me know, and we'll talk to your agent, and hopefully we'll make it happen. I have to come to the studio. Yeah, that's right. I live in Ohio, so that's a long journey. That's almost across. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because Thomas has a podcast in the studio as well. Yeah, in New York. Yeah, so L.A. and New York. I'm closer to New York, so if you ever come to New York, just let me know. And we'll perfect. Sounds good. Well, congratulations on everything. It's so good that, you know, you're doing some really good things. And stay tuned for Ariane Andrew. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Ariane Andrew, for the wonderful interview. You know, it's so funny, man. You have perceptions toward people based on what other people say, you know, and just talking to her off air and that 25-minute interview, a little over 25-minute interview with Ariane. It just, you know, it was incredibly warm and nice and just really friendly. And, you know, it's really crazy about, you know, how, you know, sometimes the IWC could create a perception to someone that in reality is just not true, because, you know, the time I talked to her off air and on the interview, she's been great. So best wishes to Ariane in her endeavors. I'm sure she's got a lot up the pike, and she just revealed one thing, and she's got a bunch more. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get right into the show. We've got so much to talk about tonight, so we're going to have some really, really good fun. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's introduce the co-host with the most from Under the Mat Radio, Evan Tech Proud. How are you tonight, sir? Good to have you on the show tonight. All right, and we also have, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we have the special guest on the show tonight, one of my favorite co-hosts, former feature columnist for Bleacher Report. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring in Travis Taylor. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
It's great. I didn't give you an applause. Let me give you an applause. Right now. All right, Evan.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, man. You deserve it. Clap, 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 clap. Evan Tech Proud, are you on air? Are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, brother. How you feeling?
All right.
Doing great.
All right, we got so much to talk about tonight, so without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. Real quick, before we get to the headlines, let's start with the guest for tonight, Travis. What are your thoughts on Ariane after that interview?
You know what? I have a newfound respect for Ariane. It was really interesting. I loved getting an insight. You know, I watched her coming up through you know, Total Divas and all the other programs. It was nice to hear her point of view and see her reactions and talk about how she's grown and had this newfound respect for the business. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Evan, Ariane.
I've always been a fan of Ariane, which most people have been a fan of. You know, great-looking lady, always worked hard. She was just warm, and always seemed cool. I learned not to, doing this for a long while in the business, you try not to go by the IWC, but give it some time with the boys and the disabled people. You have to get your own opinion. But she seemed like a sweetheart, very warm, like you said. Definitely learned a lot about her, and got to look at her in more of a, in a different light. I always respected her, but definitely she has even more of my respect now as an interview.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not down with that, I got two words for you. Mamma mia! Speaking of that, Mauro Ranallo returns to NXT. Well, returns to WWE as an NXT commentator. This is great. I think this is fantastic. Right after, it's funny, it just seems like WWE really wanted to capitalize on Ranallo's fame. Because he brings an amazing element to NXT. I can't just imagine a three-man commentating team in a takeover of Mauro Ranallo, Nigel McGuinness, and JR. Evan, I mean, are you marking out on that already?
you know, we say my little my kayfabe kind of shoot rule of no marking out in my stance, but I'm not, you know, to it. I think I'm good friends with Jim Ross, and you know, I always loved Jim Ross' work. Nigel, we've been a fan with him since day one. And Mauro, I've always liked Mauro's work even before WWE. So this is the best commentary team we have in wrestling right now.
Yeah.
And better than Raw, better than SmackDown, even though, you know, Booker T is always great to me for other reasons.
I really like Booker. Yes. He's grown so much, too, behind the booth. Yeah, he's doing fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Travis, I like Percy Watson too. I think he's maturing really well too. But it'll be really interesting. I think you got two kind of louder personalities with Mauro and Percy. Definitely a more calmer personality to kind of level out the dynamic with Nigel. I think that'll be a pretty good three-man commentary team.
Is Percy done in the ring?
Yeah, he's done. He's been in a commentating booth since late last year, I think it's been.
Yeah, and he's doing a good job. He's doing a really good job. I he's just got room to improve here on out. You know, and what you were saying earlier with Ranallo and JR and Nigel McGuinness, I would watch 6 hours of Monday Night Raw if they were the commentating team.
Amen.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah. I think Ranallo coming back, it's a win-win for the WWE. You know, mm-hmm. he's great on commentary. He's got excitement and flair. And I think looking at this from kind of like a business standpoint, I think his like public struggles with depression, I think that shines a really good light in the WWE.
Yes.
You know, and I don't think anything's really done in this day and age without having an eye on public perception.
So, absolutely, especially for.
But you know who leads this?
Go ahead.
But you know who leads this, though? JBL. JBL is the leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and just to think, this is the territory days, and JBL, like I said, he blocked me and my company and shows on Twitter. He's like the Young Bucks, anybody that went against him and defended Morrow. But hopefully he's made it on the wrestler's court. Just to think of Taker or Austin, and you're just a rib JBL, good old Jibble.
Yeah.
For what he did to Morrow.
Well, John Bradshaw Layfield, too bad for you.
Dummy.
Yeah.
Dummy. Yeah. Yeah.
Justin Hawk.
Yeah, Justin Hawk Bradshaw.
The knee black.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of two people having heat with each other, Vince Russo, he steps it up. He goes a different level. Last week we were talking about just the war between Russo and Cornette. So within the week after the last show, last week, we got information that Vince Russo has filed a restraining order against Jim Cornette. And, yeah, I mean, some people thought it was a work. It still may be a work, honestly, but I'm looking at the restraining order right now. I wrote about it. I'm looking right at it, and it's petition for an order for protection and request for a hearing filed by person seeking protection. Vincent Russo versus James Cornette, filed June the 16th, 2017. That's a case number, state of Indiana. So from what the reports were, I mean, Jim Cornette lives in Louisville. So he got a knock on his door and got it handed to him. And Cornette posted it on Twitter. Travis, how far does this go?
I really don't think it goes much further than this. This is just for show. And really, Russo's got nothing to worry about. I don't think Cornette could, chop dental floss in half if he wanted to. It's just two boys, not growing up, and just it's all for show. Nothing's going to happen for it. It's going to be forgotten by next week.
Yeah. Evan, they're in their mid-50s, man. When does it end?
We'll talk about that later. Just waiting for the Kennel of Hell match to come back too.
That's next.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be a Survivor Series.
Yeah. Survivor Series, the Thunderdome cage. First time only. The kids think it is, and we know it's not. As I told you, so this going off air. I said it on air. And as I mentioned before, I'm somewhat friends with Vinny Ru. We call him Brother Bro. And actually, he did text me and told me he was going to stay low for a bit. So, which basically gave me an indication something was going to be going on. And like I said, you had a screenshot of the text. Me and Vince, he texted him there. And he said, "Hey, bro, I'm going to stay low for a while, bro. There's too much stuff going on." So, I would say it's about 80-20, 80% shoot. Thing that happens is going to be public. I'm pretty sure Russo did mean it, but it's corny. Cornette's going to publicize everything. He's going to make everything dramatic, and anything he do is going to be on Twitter and Facebook and what have you. So, I mean, this talking to Russo off air, had him on my show. I just know a lot of times Russo doesn't say much about corny. Corny is key put. Not to say that they're both daughter dogs, but it's normally Cornette that keeps doing the antics. Russo's pretty much done. He's talking about wrestling and everything else, and Corny just keep trying to fight, keep trying to pick. So,
yeah.
What does it say? Kennel from hell.
Yeah. It just seems like this is Cornette's gimmick now, and it's like without Russo, like he doesn't even want to patch things up with Russo. There are times that Russo doesn't make it easy for Cornette to patch things up with him, but it just really seems like Cornette can't afford literally to patch things up with Russo, because that's kind of his bread and butter. That's kind of his shtick now, and it's like, if I patch things up, there goes my angle. And you know, I'll give you stories from Smoky Mountain, but it's not going to be as riveting as hating the guts of Vince Russo and wishing that he dies and talking about his mom and his wife and his kid. And it's like, man, you know, that's compelling audio podcasting right there.
Yeah.
But and as crazy as it is, I mean, that's what people like to hear. Unfortunately, there's a pretty big crowd that prefers to hear that stuff.
It's like Cornette's become a shock jock, you know?
Exactly. And that's really his stick now. And, you know, if he patches things up with Russo, that leaves a really gaping hole in his current gimmick and probably his gimmick for the rest of his podcasting days. You know, it was almost 20 years ago. You know, I mean, the Live Wire episode was over 20 years ago. It's all stemming from this Live Wire episode and then, you know, Cornette being a booker and Russo taking over. And, you know, man, you got to let it go. You know, it's like,
point, move on.
it's like if a child was born the first day that Cornette had animosity with Vince Russo, that kid would probably be like 22, 23 years old at this point. You know what I mean? So it's like my kid, like the first day I had animosity with Vince Russo, and I'm looking at a 23-year-old, you know, grown man or grown woman, and I'm like, oh, man, I really should let it go, you know, because the life has just passed me, you know, so much in my years. I was in my 30s when I had heat with Russo. Now I'm in my mid-50s. So suddenly,
oh, my God.
You know, it's like my favorite Vince line is like he said, "Get friends and better enemies in your house." That's about to be over.
they have to give it up. I don't see that happening anytime soon. It seems like, I mean, from, you know, the tweet that Cornette put out and just really looking at the restraining order, it looks legit, but. I don't know. I hope Cornette finds something different. You know, Vince Russo is definitely not an angel of himself, but Cornette, man, he just needs to find, you know, something different with his with his podcasting. I'm sure he has plenty of good stories from booking with, you know, WCW or WWE and ROH and Smoky Mountain. Probably not as riveting as, you know, his heat with Russo, but I like road stories. I soak in every time I interview like an old school wrestler, like a Greg Gagne or Jim Brunzello.
George Hackensmith.
DDP.
George Hackensmith.
When I interviewed Hackensmith. when I interviewed Gene LaBelle. You know, he told me a lot about the Bell Lock. So I just like talking to those road stories. So Steve Austin, speaking of road stories, this Steve Austin, you know, he always has some amazing stories to tell on his podcast. But it was a recent podcast where, you know, I love just the old school type of mentality. I mean, it's just, you know, and we'll talk about, you know, Braun Strowman here in a minute, but Steve Austin, you know, he made a really good point. I was just soaking in when I was listening to the podcast and writing about it and transcribed it and wrote about it on WrestleZone. I was just really kind of having some amen moments with when Austin was talking. I'll read what he said. He said, "Naomi deserves better." This is regarding Lana not having a single match on the main roster, but her first match being for the top title of the women's division on SmackDown. He said, "Naomi deserves better. The title deserves better. Lana wasn't up for this task at hand at this point in her career. I thought she had much more mystique as the valet, whatever the term is, with Rusev. Man, they kind of killed her gimmick off and reinvented her. And I just liked her the way she was. So if she wants to be in the ring, that's more power to her. But a lot of the stuff I got on Twitter was, hey, man, for a match, for a first match, she did a lot better than I expected. Okay, as I say that, good for her. But as a company who's striving for excellence in sports entertainment, professional wrestling, the best of the best belong on a pay-per-view. They're not pay-per-views anymore, but the best of the best, whatever they're, whether they're a top-tier worker or someone over with X Factor, It Factor, or selling merch or joining a crowd, those are the people that need to be featured on the pay-per-views. And all of a sudden, you have this person come from nowhere, get a title shot, be featured, now come back 2 weeks later to be on your match on SmackDown, with number or not. But I just thought you have to treat a title with higher regard and respect than that, and put the people on the pay-per-views or the events that are broadcast on the WWE Network. The best of the best are on the shows. That's just the way I see it. Jarvis, your thoughts on that?
I agree 100%. You know, there's so much about this industry that's kind of been stripped back over the years, and all the inner workings and everything. There's certain things that I think still need that mystique and that prestige, and those are the titles. I agree with Austin 100%. It should be around the waist of people who have worked hard and who deserve it and are proven draws. I like Lana. I like her character. I don't think she was ready for that match. I didn't see any reason for her to be in it. I mean, yeah, they wrote it into a storyline and it worked, but she didn't need to be there. It was unnecessary, and the title deserves, I agree 100%, the title deserves a lot better than that.
Yep.
All the Evan? Titles do.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
So.
No, I'm with you. Me and Featherstone deemed the Shabak moments. I'm with you. Austin's right. I thought the same thing. You have Lana. You reinvent her. But then her first match is a title match on a pay-per-view nonetheless. One, what does that say about the other competitors that are on SmackDown that they didn't get a title shot?
Right.
You show up the match with this straight filler, and it says you have no time for – you didn't even give her a chance. You didn't give her a chance. For us. We don't know what is she. She dances to the ring. What does she do? Who is she? Give us some time. They put more effort in the Emma, Lena, whatever it was, promos that we had to wait for like almost 3 years, being facetious, to wait for. But yet they can't do that little bit for Lana. And we already knew who Lana was. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was just really green.
Lana is a pretty good actress. Definitely has a great look. But give her time. You got NXT. I mean, what was wrong with Rusev doesn't need Lana. I mean, granted, Lana's a beautiful woman. Rusev can go by herself. I think that's what Rusev needs. Send Lana to NXT. Let Lana, like you said, build up from the bottom. Get her craft under her. Get her her character developed. And since she's already a known person, once she gets to develop, just shoot her to SmackDown. But I didn't get that.
I don't think that the WWE has the creative ability to kind of book from the back onward. Like I don't think so. Like, to me, it just seems as if, I mean, the typical traditional build is someone comes in, they just establish themselves, they get to, you know, a mid-card level, they get, you know, that way, and then they continue to build with their character to the point where the title really has to be on them, because they're really like the best gimmick in the entire, company. And it's like when you push people too fast, it becomes a really, really good, tough spot to get them out of. Like Sheamus. Like when Sheamus came in, you know, he won the WWE Championship 2 months after he debuted on the main roster. And it's like, wow, like we saw him in ECW, but yeah, okay. You know, he really didn't,
Khali.
You know, Khali, you know, he's another one, you know, but Sheamus, like, he really didn't establish himself good enough you know, for us to really buy into his face or heel character. He beat up like Jamie Noble once, and everybody was like, oh, okay, somehow that deserved the world title shot. But it's like, you know, and just, you know, it's like one of those things that WWE doesn't have just the ability to really have us hone in on a character and just taking away the whole art of the build just really messes that up. If you push someone too early, that's really kind of the standard that the people look at them as, and it's hard to rally behind someone who's already been champ. You know, where's the build? You know, if you come in as champ, you know, where's the build come in? So, you know, I understand meteoric rises and things like that, but if you think about it, even people who have meteoric rises, like Kurt Angle, you know, before he was world champ, you know, he was still Eurocontinental champion, you know, and, you know, Bill Goldberg was U.S. champ before he won, you know, the World Heavyweight Championship.
Hey, might I add that William Goldberg, yes, he's in the government, William Goldberg is undefeated and has yet lost a United States title. That's the
same
that.
Yeah, he had to let it go. Yeah,
he didn't get beat for it. He's still U.S. champ.
Yeah, that's the old school. The old school method.
And OT bouts.
Yeah, so if that's the case, Ultimate Warrior is still Intercontinental champion.
Yep.
He'll never be beat for that.
Right, and that was what 1990 WrestleMania 6.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's been Intercontinental champ for 27 years. Now he's
was it the ultimate challenge?
Level.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to be like the Fabulous Moolah. Yeah.
The ultimate challenge.
The ultimate challenge. Yeah.
We can keep going on and on about people who have title belts and never lost. RVD still is the ECW TV type champion.
He does.
Shawn Michaels is still an IC champ. His smile gave it up.
He lost his smile. Yeah.
Lost his smile, so he lost his self. And I'm good friends with Shane Douglas. I actually told him that to his face, and he busted out laughing. My man Shane Douglas is a good humor.
That's hilarious. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the Raw and SmackDown review. We'll talk about the Punjabi prison match when we get to the Raw and SmackDown debut. So let's get to it. Let's get to it. I haven't heard the theme song on SmackDown debut. Well, let's bring that back. Let's bring back the Raw and SmackDown debut song. As soon as it comes up, it'll probably just pop up sooner than later. We're going to be in the middle of a conversation all of a sudden. Boom, ba, 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 ba. but yeah, so we'll get to the Raw and SmackDown theme song whenever it decides to come on. But yeah, so we'll start with Travis on this. What are your thoughts on the Raw and SmackDown show?
All right, well, Raw. Overall, you know, it still lags behind SmackDown in terms of, I think, overall quality. It's kind of become like the redheaded stepchild of the brands. I still find Raw enjoyable for the most part, and I think they're doing a great job building towards, you know, great Balls of Fire. This week we got some good matches. We had the Hardys, you know, we had Hardys and Balor versus Sheamus, Cesaro, and Elias Sampson. But for me, for Raw, I think the highlight of the entire show was the Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe segment. I love that Joe is being presented as this strong threat to Lesnar, because I was worried. I was really worried that he was going to be treated as a joke or, like, not the same level. And heel versus heel feuds don't always work, and I know you're not really a fan of them.
Right.
But I think, like, with the real-life toughness that these guys just kind of ooze with and how strong the characters are, it's really fascinating for me to watch. I think Lesnar's going to retain the title in some way at Great Balls of Fire, probably by like DQ or count out. But Joe's going to come out super strong from this. He's really meshed in the WWE quite well. And real quick on SmackDown, it continues, I think, every week to be a better show. I'm really happy that the first woman in Women's Money to Make ladder match, I was really kind of let down. And I thought on tonight's show, they made up for that. It was a much better match. And without the weight of, you know, first ever hanging over it, it just had a lot more fun to it. Overall, great show.
Absolutely. Great evaluation there. And, yeah, what about you, Evan? What do you think?
I want to come off as the heel. I'm going to go back. We'll talk about SmackDown first. I thought SmackDown was Double T said, it was a better show, a tad better than Raw. But I don't know. I'm glad WWE is going in that direction with seeing different main events. The women can main event Raw, SmackDown. You have the newer stars main event Raw, SmackDown. It's not just Reigns or Rollins or the same people like AJ. But to me, that Money in the Bank match was okay. To me, it was so many same. To me, it was a lot of holes. It's like doing radio with so much dead air. It was just. I mean, I love all the women. I'm glad for them. I'm glad they got the spotlight. But to me, it wasn't anything about that match that made me go, wow. It was like watching a cage match, and you never use the cage. You know, you had spots where the people, and we were spots where, you know, they fall off the ladder. No one landed on top of the ladder. Everybody, the ladder wasn't touching when they got hit. People falling off the ladder supposedly hit the top rope, which they never cleared the rope. So to me, this is kind of like, I just would have liked to see maybe 2 bumps there where you go, wow. Other than that, the match was just okay. It told a good story. Ellsworth came out. I know Ellsworth. He's a man. Why can't he have fell through a table? If there's no DQ, why can't he fell through a table, have Ellsworth go through a table if you didn't want any of the women to get hit or get hurt? So overall, I mean, Sami Zayn, gosh, he'll never win a match ever again. His history, because it's bad. And then Raw, I enjoyed Raw. I love the fact that Joe is basically legit. Joe is the only person as of right now that can go toe to toe with Brock. And the LaVar Ball segment to me was hilarious. And we all know what his son said. I thought it was funny because I'm gonna defend. It wasn't as bad as This Is Your Life. I thought it was funny because these guys came out so comfortable in the ring to where The Miz and Ambrose had no idea what to do. If you go back and watch Raw, Miz and Maurice and Miz is like, what in the world? It just was like they had no idea. They were more over the top than WWE guys. You got the dad talking, taking off shirts. He saw people like, he looked like Dragonfly Jones from Martin. It just was hilarious. Like, what is going on? I thought it was funny. Not that it was the best. I mean, granted, it was better than Trump's segment. It was better than Rosie O'Donnell Trump. It was better than the Jerry Springer segment. I thought it was just funny because of the shoot responses from Miz and Maurice and Dean Ambrose, where you could just tell they were like, what is going on? What is going on? But anyway, Raw was cool. Kaz big booted and go. Good to see where that goes. Love Joe's being strong against Brock. Hopefully Great Balls of Fire, which I love the marketing program and marketing bill for it. Hopefully that match ends in a no contest. Well, I say, hey, end it in a double countout or double KO, where both guys look strong. Joe can go do whatever he's going to do for SummerSlam, and we get to see Braun Strowman against Brock Lesnar. And just the thing about that title,
I'm not finished with you.
Right, the Beast against the Monster Among Men. So, good to see that. I'm down
with
that.
So LeVar Bell. Yeah. That segment was the worst of all time.
There it goes.
No one knows
these words. No one knows who's
there. That's right.
Put the back down.
of the SmackDown Tag. Alright. Cut it off. But yeah, I could just tell I could just imagine Vince McMahon in the gorilla position telling Kevin Dunn,
cut it off now, cut it off, Kevin. cut it off.
Yeah. But yeah, that was so real quick. Let's talk about this Braun Strowman. I guess we could set up that music for the Monster Among Men, Braun Strowman. So I was feeling just down the dumps about the IWC last week, and wrote a very long piece about just Braun Strowman and just the face heel dynamic. I think. You know what? And I'm very critical about the WWE. And I've been very critical about the WWE for quite some time. But I think they got it right with Braun Strowman. I think that they're doing a fantastic job really building Braun Strowman. The problem is that he was getting so much heat when he was, you know, feuding with Foley and feuding with Zayn. But as soon as they put him with Roman Reigns, who got the most heat of anyone in the past decade, other than Vicky Guerrero, after he beat The Undertaker and came out the Raw after Mania and said, "This is my yard." I mean, that was fantastic. And then you have, after getting all that heat, you have him get beat up by Braun Strowman. So of course he's going to get cheered. And so I think that was just the start of just a really bad direction, just as far as Braun Strowman, because If a heel isn't a strong enough heel, it doesn't make a strong babyface. Because if you think about just wrestling in general, you know, you think of your Ric Flairs. So Ric Flairs, he made stars out of Sting, Magnum TA, Nikita Koloff when he turned babyface, of course, Dusty Rhodes.
The Monkees.
Yeah, I mean, Lex Luger, you know, And it's like, because he was such a good heel. Even people like Tully Blanchard, you know, when he was feuding with Dusty Rhodes, when he was feuding with Magnum TA, you know, Starrcade to Steel Cage match. And those are the people, those strong heels, they're having so much heat. And, you know, Booker T said this a long time ago. He said at the end, the good guys should always win, but the bad guys should have so much heat and they're so good that at the end of this feud, the good guy is going to look so much better than they did before, you know, when this feud started. And in WCW, you saw that, in NWA, you saw that all the time. You know, saw that with even Hogan, even Hogan's days. You know, he was running roughshod for, you know, 4 or 5 years as champ, but at the same time, every time he would go against someone, we would think, oh my goodness, is this really it? Like, is this the time? Is Earthquake going to be the one who, you know, dethrones the immortal Hulk Hogan? You know, is Tug or Typhoon going to be the one? Is Dino Bravo going to be the person? Is, you know, Lanny Poffo, Kurt Hennig,
Piper,
all these people, you know, Savage, all these people who come and oppose, you know, Hulk Hogan. They were so good heels that we thought as kids and even as adults, like, wow, this is the one, you know. And when Taker, you know, won, and we'll talk about the one-off pay-per-view for this week, this Tuesday in Texas, when Hogan won it back. But it's like when Taker won, I mean, I was devastated. I mean, I thought the end of the world has arrived. Mm-hmm. When Taker beat Hogan, because he was built up as a good heel. But nowadays, it's like, you know, Ryback said this. He said that Triple H told him that he doesn't want anyone to be bigger than the business. He don't want any wrestler to be bigger than WWE. And you can see that because their face-heel dynamic is just garbage. and they're really showing that with Braun Strowman. They've done a good job making him heel, but now he's kind of playing the tweener role, and there's not much advancement when it comes to that, because you're not really putting someone over when you're a tweener in that sense. That's why, you know, although Steve Austin, you know, he had bad guy tendencies, he was a babyface. I mean, he was, no matter how you want to slice it, Steve Austin was a babyface. He came out, he did his thing. He feuded against the biggest heel of the company, Vince McMahon, and that's how he got over. Quick, you know, plain and simple. Travis, what are your thoughts on this, the Braun Strowman and the face of the dynamic?
You nailed it right on the head, what you're saying. They've done such a fantastic job. Braun Strowman, a year and a half ago, I didn't think much of this guy, but watching him grow, taking on the way they did it when I was growing up watching wrestling, when they had to face, they called them the preliminary guys back then, you know, now it's the enhancement talent, whatever you want to call it. It was such a great, I think, brilliant idea to build him up. And part of the problem going up against Roman Reigns is, you know, Roman Reigns has no personality. And that, I think that's part of the problem. Of the three guys from the Shield, he has the least amount of personality. And I don't think people don't like to be told who to root for, who not to root for. So when you get somebody like Roman Reigns, who's just flat, and he's presented as, here's the guy, he's the next big thing. Of course they're going to cheer for Braun Strowman. In terms of character, you know, he's larger than life. For me, I see him, he's a throwback to, like, the old school heels, like the big monster heels. He just beats people up because he wants to, because he can.
Yep.
And it works. Yep. And I think fans, they appreciate his character, but in this particular instance, they just love that he's destroying Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. And it just really, it points out the need to organically grow baby faces so that the heels don't continue to be cheered.
Very true. Absolutely, 100%. As a matter of fact, that was so good, you get one of these. Yeah. Evan
Thanks.
Tech Proud, can you get it? Can you get a ding as well? Let's see what you got.
About the monster among men.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It's, like you said, they built Strowman. It's probably the best build that they've done for anybody in a long time. The good news is that Braun doesn't have to worry about hitting the Cena wall. Because every time we get a big major heel push, they hit Captain Four Kids, John Cena, and the push dies.
Right. Right, that's true.
So,
yeah, that's true. I'll give you one of those just for that. That was very true.
Yeah, people can get mad all they want. If it's proven, going history, you hit the Cena wall, you're done. Mm-hmm. Why it still has yet to recover.
True.
Well,
Barrett's gone.
Has yet to recover.
Barley's gone.
Yeah, exactly. They're all gone. Barrett's gone. Umaga, you know, he done went on to glory, but he couldn't overtop it. But
yeah, he got derailed. Yeah.
It's I love how they build in Strowman. You easily forget that he's to be with the Wild family. And
true.
I think it's a great build, and like WT said, it's the reverse psychology of, you know, we're gonna shove this guy down your throat, we're gonna tell you who to cheer, and we're going to boo you. Or we're going to tell you who to boo, and we're going to share it. We're going to go against whatever you tell us to do because we're supposed to have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And LeBron, that to the contrary, as I told you before, Father Stone, the good thing about people cheering you when you're legitimately a heel shows how old you are. So that's a good thing. As I was always told by old school legends, long as they're reacting, that's good. You can boo all you want and cheer, but when you don't see anything at all, that's when you're in trouble. And you clearly see when Braun, and you clearly see when Braun came out. And of course, you know, he's a heel, but like you said, he's against Reigns. So he's taking the place of Cena. So anybody that goes against Reigns is going to get cheered. You can take the Miz and go against Reigns. He's going to get cheered. Even X-Pac in 1999, the X-Pac, he probably will get cheered going against Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And there's nothing against Reigns, and I like Reigns. It's just, that's how it is. And even anything Braun does, you can say, like this ain't a warrior princess, Hercules monster that he is, the fans, but they're all and so it's going to be interesting to see SummerSlam. You see Brock and Braun, who's going to cheer? Are they going to cheer for Brock? Are they going to cheer for Braun?
It seems like they're making. It seems like they're making Lesnar the baby face. And real quick, just my thoughts on Raw and SmackDown. Real quick, it seems like they're making Brock the baby face, especially with the Joe thing. I think that's a really good way to really push Joe, and I'm glad they're making Joe look more legitimate as the weeks progress. Big fan of that. I'm hoping that actually Lesnar gets no advantage on Joe into the match. I think that would be good. I think that would be a very good way to push Joe. My favorite part was Neville versus Lince Dorado. No, it wasn't. That wasn't my favorite part. That was just the Cruiserweight Classic is just such an eyesore on Raw. I despise it.
I forgot about that. That's going
around. And it's like, first of all, you put the Cruiserweights, you put 205 on there, and first of all, 205 Live is in the toughest spot of the entire week. You're right after, like, just think about it from a live crowd perspective. I've said this before. You have 2 hours of SmackDown television that has a bigger stage to it, better production, you know, just has a hyper feel to it. So you have 2 hours of a bigger, more invested show. And then you're telling me that I'm supposed to stick around for another 45 minutes to watch Cruiserweights? Like, to me, that just makes absolutely no sense. And it's 10 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock. I'm already tired because I've already watched, 2 hours of programming. And you're expecting me to stay in the crowd to watch, Cruiserweights. That's going to really have no bearings to any type of storyline. And even if the storyline occurs, it's not going to be interesting. I mean, I like the Drew Gulak no fly zone stuff, but it's like it hasn't even really transcended to the main roster, And it's like, I mean, not to main roster, but to Raw or SmackDown, to one of the main shows. But I mean, as far as the as far as SmackDown's concerned, the Usos, aka 12 Days, the whole Hype Bros thing, it seems like we're going to get a Zack Ryder turn. WWE has a knack for turning for splitting up teams nowadays. And as soon as you spend more time actually building teams up, now you're splitting up teams. Last week we saw one half of American Alpha and the other half about 5 steps in and back to the to backstage. This week we don't see American Alpha at all. So it's odd. It's really odd. Enzo and casting, I'm still not sold in it. I'm still, I'm open.
It's too early.
Open to see how this progresses. I'm not in it yet.
Too soon.
Just the whole I'm gonna be your friend again and turn. I mean
Lifetime, logo, Oprah Winfrey stuff.
My wife will catch. My wife will actually endure about 7 minutes of pro wrestling nowadays. A few years ago, she would hang for about an hour and a half, but nowadays it's like less than. What's that?
She went from an hour and a half to 7 minutes. What a drop that is!
Well, look at the ratings. I think everybody went from 3 hours to no hours.
what you need? You need more of the balls. You need more of the LeVar balls and the Lorenzo. Greatest segment on Raw. 3.0.
No. No way. There's no way I'm gonna do that. Oh, yuck. You could keep your LeVar balls and LaMelo beat that N-words A. And I'm like, what? what is wrong with you? This isn't like, this isn't the daggone, you know, pickup game on, you know, in the, on the block. I mean, come on, dude.
Look, come on now. On the contrary.
Yeah.
It got people talking about Raw.
No.
And if this was the Attitude Era again, we would have loved it.
No. I think that is
people
the
talking.
Worst explanation I can ever hear about. Here's the thing. as a fellow African American, there's no way in the world that we should use that word to leverage anything.
And by
LaMelo saying that just so, you know, willingly.
He said
it twice. And it's like, man.
Dean Ambrose was like, what?
Yeah, he actually said WTF as he was coming out. And, he had a tough task to really clean that up.
What would you rather, that or Booker T?
Neither.
No, I get that, but I'm just saying, and I agree with you, you shouldn't have said it. He said it twice. That's why WWE put out the statement, PR move, because, you know, Vince was not having it. What is going on? What is that song? So it's like this. I agree with you. He shouldn't have said it. Besides the comments, the segment was hilarious because it was just random. People are talking about this segment more than anything else that happened on Raw, was let you know the current state of the product. Because when I had this segment happen back in the Attitude Era during the Monday Night Wars, it probably would have got lost in the shuffle.
Well, I think they're talking about this segment because LeVar Ball is an idiot. I mean,
you know what? They're not talking about the product, though. They're talking about what he said.
Yeah.
That's what people talking about. That's the problem.
And his antics is being crazy, taking off his shirt, running on the ropes. I'm like, what is going on here?
He's like the heel of everything now. You've got $500 shoes, you know, that even Corey Graves and Booker T just totally ruined your brand because they were just eating his shoes alive. They were talking about how bad they are. And so it's like, that whole segment was just
Would you rather buy those shoes or would you rather still buy the Eichel Pro?
B, I'm not buying a pair of $500 shoes. Here's the thing. I'm not buying $500 shoes. If I was a millionaire, I'm not buying a pair of $500 shoes. I could do so much more with my life with $500.
Yeah, you can
buy a pair of shoes. Yeah.
They don't even look good.
They're not even good. No, they're not even. I wouldn't pay $100. Perhaps 30, maybe 30, and that's if I'm feeling lucky. If I'm feeling good on a Friday, now let's go buy me some Big Baller Brand shoes. Big Baller Brand,
that's the highest thing going today.
Yeah, I would buy a pair of Big Baller Brands to perfect my super kick.
The question is this, real quick: what is worse? The cruiserweight division or the mini division from back in 1998.
The cruiserweights.
I think the mini division at least
had some storylines or something.
Yeah, at least it was some type of attraction. It was eccentric. It was something different, you know. But the cruiserweight, it just blends right in and it's terrible. I did like Carmelo winning the Money in the Bank again. I'm high on Carmelo. I think she's doing a really good job. I think she's getting a lot of heat. I'm a big fan that she's getting a lot of heat, and she's doing a really good job. She's growing right before our eyes, you know, like a little kid, you know, about to graduate high school. So cute. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the Flavor of the Week. We're going to talk about some This Tuesday in Texas. So let's go to the Flavor of the Week. Here we go.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right. This Tuesday in Texas, let me run down the card real quick. The first match was Bret the Hitman Hart. Bret Hitman Hart, he was still known in 91. Him beating, there were so many dark matches. There were 8 dark matches. And only 5 matches were on the pay-per-view, actually. That was the craziest thing. Bret Hart beat Skinner. Randy Savage beat
Skinner.
And then Savage got like 4 DDTs, and Robert slapped Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
So that was great.
The British Bulldog defeating the Warlord with Harvey Whippleman. I forgot that Harvey Whippleman was managing the Warlord. Repo Man and DiBiase defeating El Matador and Virgil. Yeah, that's
awesome. Got to El Matador.
Yeah. And then Hulk Hogan defeating The Undertaker. Evan, what are your thoughts on it, and what do you grade it?
Oh, man, I give this about a C. Man, this makes this whole Tuesday in Texas makes 205 Live like Starrcade 97. yes, is it okay to say Featherstone? This is my doing. I told Featherstone, say, hey, this will be random. Be Tuesday in Texas.
Yep.
I hate the VHS on this. Oh gosh, this thing was bad. Yeah, Skinner against Hitman. You got fake Undertaker, pre-fake Undertaker, Brian Lee. It was just, we got to see Piper against Flair in a singles match, which we only had to wait 7 years later for them to face each other again. This pay-per-view has so many dark matches. El Matador against Ted DiBiase. You had the Beverly Brothers against Road Warriors. Like, what is going on? Is the talent around this time, they had so much talent, so many legends in this pay-per-view, and this on a historic note, this had a disappointing buy rate of 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
this
was bad. Yeah.
Remember, right? This was after Survivor Series, and this was in between Survivor Series and before the Rumble. So, hey, we got the Great Rumble after this, but in Mikey, you Undertaker against Hogan. I never was a big Hogan fan, so I really thought Hogan was going to be done when Taker beat him at Survivor Series, and then Hogan beat him with their roll-up, grabbing
yeah.
tights. Like, I got upset.
Travis, what do you got? what's your thoughts, and real quick, your grade?
All right. Well, I'll start off with the grade. I'm actually going to give it a B because you got to look at the show back, I think, in the time period that it happened. And I thought it wasn't that bad. You go. I was watching it this afternoon. You go back and you listen to the crowd reactions. The whole face heel dynamic, the whole character development was perfect. You clearly defined good guy and bad guy. I thought, yeah, the buy rates were low, but it was a fresh idea, something new that WWE was trying out. And there were some really fun matches. I loved Randy Savage versus Jake Roberts. I thought it was great. And I agree with Evan. Like, I thought the highlight of the whole show was the Undertaker Hogan match. And when I think back to it, like, for me, this was the point in time. In a time of change for the WWE, but it was the point in time when, as a kid, I no longer looked at Hulk Hogan as the immortal Hulk Hogan. This was when that sheen, for me, started coming off of Hogan. This was, he won his 4th world title. He wasn't perfect anymore. He was rolling up, using the tights. Everything changed for me as a kid. And this is also, you know, the end, I really think the end of the Hogan era. After this, we had, you know, Flair, Savage, Hart, Yokozuna, all these different champions. And when you look at the ramifications of this show, like, look what we got out of this. We got, you know, Ric Flair winning the 92 Royal Rumble, becoming the world champion. We got every Rumble after that getting a title shot, you know? It just had a lot of changes to the WWE. So I think, you know, I'll give it a B, maybe even a B+.
Yeah, I think that's a good assessment. Real quick, only got a couple minutes left. I want to spend the next couple minutes. This is the reason why I give it a B. I'm just going to sit back and relax and enjoy this. This is a promo during the show.
From a long-awaited encounter, we will finally see a one-on-one confrontation between Jake the Snake Roberts and the Macho Man Randy Savage. Jake Roberts, the big decision from President Jack Tunney, there will be no reptile allowed in your corner. Now, earlier I saw the Macho Man and his lovely bride, Elizabeth. Randy Savage is wired to the max. He cannot wait to get you into the ring.
So what? As cold as a razor blade, as tight as a tourniquet, like the skin on a dying man. Randy Savage, the last time I seen you, you were flailing like some helpless child, drowning. Drowning from what? Drowning from the very poison that was running through your veins after that snake had chewed on that arm. For some time he did chew. Now you look at my eyes, Randy Savage, and you see two black holes in the sky. But you look at that snake eyes, and you'll see something so cold and so devilish and so deliberate. Yes, he takes care of what he has to, does what he has to, just like me. Your eyes weren't even there, man. You were out. You were gone. But you know whose eyes I enjoy the most? Do you? Elizabeth. Pupils so small, so intent, so scared for the man that she loved. And what a rush I got, man. Up and down my back, it felt so good. My hair felt like it was tingling. I mean, I had goosebumps all over my body listening to you squeal for a man that could not do anything but flail around and couldn't help himself at all, you know? And see, the thing about Jack Tunney barring the snake from the corner. Let me tell you something, Jack Tunney. When I was brought into this world, I could not rob, I could not steal, I could not lie, I couldn't even cheat. But boy, did I have some help learning. You have taught me so well. So you see, it is not my fault, anything that I do out there. You have given me the right to. You have almost pushed the button to make me do it. You have pulled the trigger. So anything that I do is your fault. Snake in the corner, trust me. Trust me.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding
me? Wow.
That's a promo.
The message.
I was looking at that, and I was like, I have to edit that in the show tonight. I have to, because that's just what wrestling was about. I mean, like,
brilliant.
It was two minutes of just an otherworldly type of, I mean, are you kidding me? I was so amazed at just that promo. It was incredible.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh.
The stuff we watched.
Oh my goodness. Like,
wow.
Shabak moments, Taylor.
Man, oh man.
Okay,
to have
a Shabak moment.
That was that was so incredible to me. And I was like, yeah, I have to play this on the show. I had to edit it and play it on the show because it was so encapsulating to me. Even
not only 26 years later.
We got a roll though. We've got like literally 15 seconds. Real quick, what you got?
Oh, real quick, he said, trust me, he's a snake. He always said it in his promos. Love it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it.
Travis Taylor, Evan Prout, Chris Featherstone for Crave Wrestling has been fantastic. Trust me. I'm out of here. God bless you all. Have a good night.
Talk to you later.
Good night.